podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. In a week where Chris is pumped up, I've never quite seen him this pumped up. We've had to start a little bit late because he's had a tradesman come round, okay? And he's just, I thought it was just testosterone because, you know, when he's talking to tradesmen, you have to be a little bit punchy. So, you know, you're telling them, you know, you can't rip me off, mate. I know about this stuff. And you've had that really rare thing. Tell us, Chris, what happened with your guttering man?
I wasn't expecting to be talking about this. Back here, we've got a leaking gutter, and I found the problem and got a guttering guy to come round, and he agreed with me, so I'm feeling very good about things. he worked out that I'd worked out what the problem was, and so we can get it fixed, which is
that's
great.
Just so pleasing.
I don't know if it's testosterone exactly, but
it looks like it from here, although the line isn't very good.
My camera's a little out of focus, maybe.
Testosterone at this distance. Also, this is something I've just read. You may well have already seen it.
I was talking to the guttering man.
Talking with him. Yeah.
Yeah. My mate, Mark Gutter. That's what I call him.
Gutso. This is something that's just cropped up, but you may have seen it already. The word Pele has entered the Portuguese dictionary.
Has it?
Yes, and they've decided, just by dint of being the people that run a dictionary, that Pele means exceptional, incomparable, and unique.
So as an adjective?
Yeah.
As opposed to a Pele.
Yes. I'm hoping, because it's a Portuguese dictionary, I'm hoping it's going to start a trend. We can have Ronaldo, which could mean a flouncer.
A Ronaldo. Yeah.
A flouncer, yeah.
I was thinking, big neck.
Yeah. Well, funny you should mention necks, because then I was thinking about Pepe, who I think would be a tortoise without a shell, which is what I always thought that Pepe looked like. So any suggestions that you've got for what Carlton Palmer might mean in the next the Oxford English Dictionary would be greatly gratefully received.
Yeah, cool. Now, one thing I did see, you know, sometimes you see a headline on a newspaper and you can't resist. It's like you can't wait to have a go at it. It's like the jokes start choking you. And you don't even want to actually read the story and the terrible, mundane explanation of it. On the front of the Telegraph a few days ago, at the weekend, there was this. Samantha Cameron, quote, "I have to remind David to avoid the middle aisle at Aldi," quote. See page 25.
What?
And you think, what the fuck? So David Cameron goes into Aldi, loves it apparently, but why does he have to avoid the middle aisle? I mean, I all sorts of explanations were going to it. I thought, is the middle aisle where they keep the gammon? And she's worried she won't be able to find him. is that what it is? Or is the middle aisle where they keep the West Ham stuff? Because you never know, you might be tempted. That whole Villa supporting can of worms gets opened up again. I imagine he's supporting Villa just now because they're doing quite well, aren't they?
And
how many aisles are there in their Aldi for there to be a middle? Are there only three
for there to be a middle one? Are you a habitué of Aldi? Have you been to Aldi? Because the middle aisle has got its own, it's a whole world on its own, the middle aisle in Aldi.
Okay.
Are you aware of that?
Well, I'm only aware of it because I read the article to find out what the fuck she was talking about.
Yeah, it's stuff that they've bought because it became available, and it's not stuff that they always have. And it's stuff that men think, oh, we could do with one of those. So, you know, it's garden umbrellas or a giant chess set. It's that sort of stuff.
Giant chess set. The thing that she's particularly wanting to steer David Cameron away from is plastic foot spas. Apparently they have plastic foot spas in the middle aisle of the Aldi at Chipping Norton. But anyway, a little glimpse into the life behind behind the scenes there at Cameron Towers.
Yes, exactly so.
It didn't really feel like a front page story to me, but it was on the front of the Telegraph.
No, but also, you know, a man who can't be trusted to avoid the middle aisle in Aldi, who was our Prime Minister.
Yeah, can't be you trusted. Know, what can they be trusted to do?
Exactly so.
Yeah, but there was something I saw, to get back to football, there was a tangential football interest in that little item, but something I haven't heard before, which is always pleasing when you hear a manager after a game saying a thing that you hadn't ever heard one of them say before. And it was Emma Hayes of Chelsea, the Chelsea ladies manager. And they lost at the weekend to an early goal from Barcelona.
4 minutes, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes. And Emma Hayes described this goal as just a 0.03 XG.
Okay.
As if to say, like, you know, it was a fluke goal or a really unusual occurrence or a really good goal. It wasn't much of a chance. I don't think I've heard XG being applied to an individual chance by anyone before.
No.
And I was quite. I mean, I have been looking more and more at XG lately. I don't know why. But I mean, I've got used to it. It doesn't irritate me quite so much.
You're not under house arrest, are you?
No.
Okay, just checking, because that can often, you know, lead us to wander into worlds that we wouldn't necessarily have wandered into otherwise.
Well, you would know. Anyway, I'm still spending far too much of my time, not looking at XG, but spending far too much of my precious brain space on your idea for the sitcom about Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo sharing a flat in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. I mean, it's got legs.
I think it has.
And it's got necks.
Yeah.
But did you see this week's episode involves calls for Cristiano to be expelled from Saudi Arabia for making a controversial groin-clutching gesture towards rival fans? Did you see that story?
Yes.
Which was fantastic, because it's caused widespread offence throughout the country, especially, according to the story, because it's the holy month of Ramadan.
Yeah.
When you're not supposed to be clutching your groin or indeed anything else. And why would he do this? It's because fans of Al Hilal, Al Nasser's rivals, were singing Lionel Messi's name to taunt Cristiano as they beat his team 2-0. Right. So it's got everything. It's got everything in there for a whole episode. I'm thinking in this episode, Lionel's mate Emmy Martinez has been staying in the spare bedroom on a one-episode guest visit.
Yes.
And has been teaching Cristiano a whole range of horrible groin-related gestures.
Yeah.
And Al Nasser said, did you see that Cristiano had a sensitive groin injury, which is why he was clutching himself?
Of course he did. Yes. RRE teacher had that problem as well. I start to think Ronaldo also got himself into trouble for suggesting that maybe they'd like to rename Ramadan Ronaldadam.
There you go. There's half an episode.
It's a subplot.
I love the pictures from the Al Hilal game, because there were lots of Al Hilal shirts with Messi written on the back. And they might have jumped the gun, I think, because Lionel is widely reported to be thinking of going back to Barcelona, isn't he? And do you see what Barcelona's plan to tempt Lionel back?
Well, I only saw the "we will leave no stone unturned to find Messi back," which I thought was a very insulting thing to say.
Well, but what they're doing with the stones once they've turned them is they're going to build them into a Lionel Messi museum. Okay?
Okay.
And you think, oh my God, how Ronaldo would love a Ronaldo museum. And and there have been moves to apparently persuade Cristiano to go back to Spain as well. But that feels more like a season two thing to me. You know, once we've done the whole Saudi thing.
Just before we get to jumping the shark, we'll do that.
Let us jump the shark with that.
Yes.
With that item.
Really, we should talk about, because we're recording this on a Thursday, and so last night was the supposed the Premiership decider.
Yeah, that's always catches me out that. Yeah, it's not a Championship decider, is it?
No, it's a completely different trophy decider. Yeah. I know you were watching the game, because we spoke at halftime. You've said this a couple of times. I've taken to turning off straight after the game finishes.
Yes.
And then I miss stuff. And I saw this morning the Ben White and Foden having a set two.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
And I saw the start of it, and I thought, bloody England player handbags.
I'm just desperate to know what it was that had sparked this. Because Foden had hardly played, had he?
No, hardly played. But he must have said something. And they were quite bad tempered once they were like 3-0 down.
Oh, they were. Yeah.
Arsenal.
Yeah.
Yes, and Ben White went down claiming he'd been kicked, by Rodri, who is it Rodri? I think so. And he's a piece of work, Rodri, I think.
Yeah, I think he was kicked by him, but not particularly.
Yeah. Not enough to send him off. No. But no, I mean, it was, yes, billed as the... It was a bit of a damp squib, really, wasn't it, as showdowns go. You know, the head-to-head of all head-to-heads.
Yeah, good football. I mean, there was lots of good football.
Yeah, lots... Yeah, sort of, yeah.
But not from Arsenal, you know. And I'm not just really saying that because, you know, somebody preternaturally hates Arsenal, but I'm saying it because it actually made it a disappointing game from that point
of
view.
It was a disappointing game, but then I think the sort of game it was kind of prefigured by Arsenal's previous, like, three games, where they, not so long ago, I remember laughing at my Arsenal friend Jim when I went with him to the Palace game, and when they just fired Vieira and not got Hodgson yet and not rebounded yet, and they were so unimpressive and they hadn't had a shot on target, and Jim was really anxious that Arsenal should get a 3-goal cushion, and I've been kind of ribbing him a little bit about since. Yeah. But then they've gone on a little run of games where what they really needed was to get a 3-goal cushion.
The
Liverpool game, they were two up, they were bossing the game, and they didn't try and get a 3-goal cushion. They sat and try and control the game in a very sort of Arteta sort of a way. And then when Liverpool scored, obviously they panic set in and they were shitting themselves for the whole second half. Against West Ham, they did the same thing. Did you see the West Ham game? They were 2-0 up after 9 minutes, and West Ham had hadn't had a kick. West Ham had pulled all the team back into the penalty area, and Arsenal were still scoring. Because you know how difficult it is when all the opposition are in the penalty area, like how many England-Luxembourg games you've seen over the years. But Arsenal were just going round them, over them, through them, scored two goals without West Ham laying... And then they stopped. And then, halfway through the second half, it's 2-2. Arsenal hadn't had a shot since that second goal in the 9th minute because they'd just pulled back, they'd just relaxed, they'd just become, I don't know, cautious or panicky. This is the Arsenal that then played Southampton last Friday, which is a game that I went to with Jim.
Yeah.
And looking at the game, you see a slightly different game from the TV when you can see the whole thing. And it was really striking how none of the Arsenal players were really prepared to take a risk at all the game, at all. And they spent so much time, and they were 3-1 down in the second half. And all that time they spent just knocking the ball across the midfield, it was like, someone else is going to... I don't want to take the risk. Yeah. Someone else take the risk. Yeah. And you could see that Southampton were really scared of Saka on the right and Martinelli on the left. But the ball was coming to Saka so slowly that you could see Southampton moving across having time to double up on him. And leaving Martinelli completely on his own, actually. But by the time Arsenal tried to move the ball to him, you could see Southampton just moving across and blocking that off. And it was only in the last 5 minutes that they really started to take a risk. And they got a couple of goals and they could have won that game.
Yeah.
But what we saw, I think, last night against City was no one wanted it to be their fault. That was what it was. I mean, their heads have gone, obviously, and so they're clearly not a threat at corners anymore. but it was that. I hate the thing. It really drives me mad when they say, oh, Manchester City, they know what it takes. They've been there before. They've done the... I think that's nonsense. I think that's nonsense. But what isn't nonsense, I think, is that Arsenal, in the three games leading up to this, have been slapped so hard that they've lost their nerve.
They've lost their nerve. They've lost a couple of players. And I think the Southampton game is interesting because I thought in the West Ham game and the Liverpool game, what they did was they went 2-0 up and they started thinking about the next game, which of course managers always claim is definitely not going to be happening. You know, we'll be thinking about that game on Monday. No, that's what happened. And people don't want to get injured, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, much moaning from Arsenal fans this morning, which I was quite surprised about because they did kind of get spanked. Piers Morgan, just so cross with them. And you think, God, you went to support them. They've had a fantastic season, to be fair, and they might still win it. Who's to say? You're going to be in the Champions League. You had no right to even think that you'd be in contention. And it's still straight away, they lose a bloody game and it's like, oh, rubbish they are. They're bloody rubbish. It's fucking mad. And lots of talk about the VAR as well, which for John Stones' goal, which was actually a really, really, really good header.
Yes.
And just, again, why players don't wear green boots, I don't know.
Because, just to camouflage their feet.
Yeah, instead of wearing those great big white, they may as well have been wearing clown shoes just to make sure everyone's played onside, even if you're standing outside of the area.
Yeah, well, I think as well, if you wear those luminous yellow boots like Ben White ones, there's like a sort of extra imaging happens.
There's a halo.
Where they seem bigger. They seem bigger than a black boot would be hiding away. And it was perplexing, that one, because they showed the replay, and he looked clearly offside. But then when they actually did the VAR in it, it was like they did it on a different frame. On a different frame to the one they'd showed earlier, where suddenly Ben White's foot was sticking out a bit more.
They're going to have to look into this, because the luminous boots, I agree with you, and I wonder, I'm too lazy to bother to work it out. I wonder if there are more offsides overruled in night games when the luminous boots show up.
The luminous boots seem to be bigger, larger.
Because they're throbbing. They're throbbing with light that's bouncing back off them.
Exactly. But what you're saying is you're not prepared to put the work in to find that out.
No, not really. No.
Colour me surprised.
I'm going with it. It's true. Other things we've had.
The Newcastle Spurs game was quite a thing at the weekend, wasn't it? I mean, five up after 20 minutes. I mean, you had to laugh in a way, but without any particular stake in who wins that game. But football suddenly looked just incredibly easy for just a little while, didn't it? But after five, the intensity drops off, and it always kind of does,
doesn't it?
And you think 5-0 up after 20 minutes, this could be 20 the way this is going. But if you'd asked me what the final score was going to be at 5-0, I would have said 6-1. I would have said Spurs are going to get one, Newcastle will get one more. Yeah. And that's how the mentality of being spanked like that seems to work.
When we beat Liverpool 6-1, it was the same. We were five up at half time and then the second half. It's always going to be. But to be fair though, and you've watched your boys, it's one of the things that used to make me laugh so much watching my lad when he was about 10 was that teams never stop going for goals at that age group. They will go on and on and on and then come off complaining saying, it could have been 39 if you'd bloody passed to me. You know?
Yeah.
It's just relentless cruelty of children.
I don't know why football is the intensity. There seems to be like a sort of mutual agreement to drop off, doesn't it? And almost professional courtesy, or almost that to get 5-0 up after 20 minutes, you have to be playing at the top of your game, and you can't play at the top of your game for 90 minutes, and you play at 90% after that, and blah blah blah. You know?
And I like to think that they think, if we keep scoring this week, we won't have as many goals in us next
week.
Yes, that's right.
We need to keep some goals in the goal bank for next week.
You know what the phrase is, Chris? Don't spunk it all up the wall today. That's the phrase.
I do know that phrase. Yes.
Then the Spurs players have offered to pay for the tickets. Well, they did, didn't they?
Which was, they've refunded the away ticket holders, but not without one public relations issue. Did you see that? Where club loyalty points that apparently you get for buying away tickets.
Well.
They were erased as well, along with the whole transaction. And they were, you know, later reinstated. And it was just it was blamed on a computer glitch. But it's like Spurs just don't seem to be able to get anything right just at the moment. And, you know, loyalty points. This is a thing. I feel like loyalty points ought to be removable by the, you know, some of those fans... Spurs fans, they'd gone all the way up to Newcastle, fair play to them, they'd bought a ticket, they'd spent the, but they were leaving after 20 minutes. You know, that's not you shouldn't get a loyalty point if you go to a game and leave it after 20 minutes because you're pissed off.
Yes.
I mean, and these, and you know, the guys leaving at 20 minutes are the same guys who are going, where's my fucking loyalty points, you fucking heap of shit, you know? Well, and loyalty points, the whole idea of loyalty points makes me feel slightly ill.
Oh, you yes, know, of course. And you
like
know
supermarket that. Supermarket loyalty points, you know, I don't get any from Aldi because I don't go in there, because no. I don't need a plastic foot spa. But no. I don't want to be patted on the head for being loyal to fucking Sainsbury's. It annoys the hell out of me that they know I've been in there. Yeah. And even more when they send me loyalty points, as they did last Christmas. They sent me extra loyalty points for buying more cheese slices in the calendar year than anyone else in that Sainsbury's.
Oh.
And that just seems sinister to me.
Yeah, but surely, still. Surely some sort of award ceremony.
Exactly. You know? If you're going to do it, yeah. Send me cheese slices. You know what I like.
Yeah, we want awards, not bloody rewards. But anyway, it's a terrible precedent. They're paying fans off in this way. Because, I mean, for a start, if this had always existed, you know, Stoke would owe me tens of hundreds of thousands of pounds, I have to say. And that's you know, over the last 50 years, that's not where I go.
Well, it adds up, doesn't it? It adds up.
This is going to happen. This is going to happen now. The next time somebody gets tonked away, the fans are going to be going, you should be paying for this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, pay for this. Where's my fucking loyalty points?
Yeah, and then they'll talk to the PGMOL if the referee ruins the game. The referee has to spend, you know, for 50,000 people, he has to pay them off. It's a balmy, 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 balmy idea.
It was a balmy game, the Newcastle Spurs game. Do you see Hugo Lloris? He didn't really look at it, did he? He wasn't really trying for some of it. And he was subbed off at halftime. Apparently he'd injured his hip. Picking the ball out of the net. It was a repetitive strain injury.
Yay!
But, you know, and I like the quote very much from Danny Rose, the former Spurs defender, who said, all I've been thinking this first half is, how am I unemployed?
Yeah, yeah.
And how are you, Danny? How are you unemployed?
I'm the same when I watch PMQs. I just think, these guys are getting fucking paid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's that mean to me?
And they sacked the interim manager, which is a huge... new step to take, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he became, at that moment, the first manager in Premier League history to be fired without shaking hands with any other Premier League managers, apparently, or looking like he'd enjoyed a single moment of it.
Yeah.
And they were suggesting Harry Redknapp as a suggestion for a new interim manager before they got Ryan Mason. But, and the people are very spooked, I think, by Roy Hodgson's success.
Yes. Without any
looking at old, that. Looking at, you know, what old blokes could we get now?
It's gone all the way around again.
And yeah, I mean, halfway through the season, people were looking for managers that look like Pep Guardiola. And now they're looking for managers that look like Roy Hodgson.
Yeah. And so. I'm hoping, because there's somebody at the door, they're looking for managers who look like me. So we're going to take a little break while I answer the door.
Anyway. Now that we've all gone woo at the crazy roller coaster that is the greatest league in the world trademark, marvelling at the people who ride with their hands in the air instead of clutching hold of their stomachs in a vain attempt to prevent vomiting, let us now turn our attention to the small, shiny metal slide in the park that has somehow lost all friction over the many years it has been rusting in place, obliging bare-legged children to shuffle along on their bottoms and heels to inch down to the end and actually get off the thing. I speak, by means of metaphorical juxtaposition, of the Vanarama, the National League Conference booby prize thing. Now, my team, Oldham Athletic, have in recent weeks hauled themselves well clear of the relegation scrap, unlike our opponents on Saturday, Yeovil Town. The only thing that denied us the opportunity of relegating a second team this season, having dashed the dreams of a great escape by Scunthorpe a couple of weeks ago, was that Wrexham had already extinguished all hope the previous Tuesday night. Wrexham, taking all the glory, all the fun, with their Hollywood razzmatazz. You will have seen the scenes from the racecourse on Saturday evening as they clinched the title with a record points total and a game to spare, much to the delight of Ryan Deadpool and Rob Philadelphia, and not to mention their movie star mate, Paul Antman, who was also in the pub doing selfies with all the drunk Welshmen. So I'm glad they did it, actually.
But Paul Antman, if it's Pete Antman, it's Pantman, isn't it? That's really yeah. pleasing.
Yeah, there you go. Let's call him that.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'm glad they did it. I'm glad to see the back of them with their money bags and their League One players, and they do richly deserve it, even though Notts County have run them pretty close, also breaking the points record, just not by quite so much. The moment I most enjoyed, I don't know if you saw this, but was seeing that someone in the crowd at Wrexham had made a cardboard and tinfoil replica of the Vanarama trophy to wave about. And I bet they had to look up what that looks like. I wouldn't have recognised it in a lineup with, say, the Scottish Championship and the trophy off of Richard Osman's House of Games. You know, one they're in a lineup, one of them's a wrong one. But anyway, so Yeovil were already down, having been a Championship side far more recently than us, actually. And they'll be dropping into the National League South, a small pond where they will be big fish, provided they don't go bust. All is not well, apparently, off the field there, I'm afraid. But anyway, I watched the National League stream with the Yeovil commentary, which was done by a despondent yet still outstandingly chirpy pair, a woman and a man, who spent much of the time absolving individual players from blame and nominating players of the season who won't be at Hewish Park next season. Now, I'm not sure I could have been so supportive or even interested if Oldham had crashed out, as looked possible, even likely around the turn of the year. But anyway, Oldham secured a 3-0 win without too much drama, very early goal from Devon Green that almost visibly knocked the fight out of Yeovil, and then two more later on from substitute Big Mike Fondop, who is our top scorer, and also, by the way, the runaway favourite for our goal of the season after his over-the-shoulder half-bicycle kick against Dorking. Half-bicycle kick is technically a unicycle kick, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, it is. That Dorking night was kind of a special night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Very, very wet, but I have mentioned it many times.
Yes.
A 5-1 away win at what is essentially a sports centre. But anyway, it meant that since throwing away a 2-goal lead, Arsenal style, against 10-man Altrincham in the last few minutes, unable to hold on to that clean sheet, we've won 4 in a row, holding on to the clean sheet in all 4, making me look foolish for demanding that they press on and try and win the fucking game.
Isn't that the mirror image of not trying to score any more goals, so you have more goals up your sleeve, is to allow the other team to score late in the previous game in the hope you can get a clean sheet for the next one.
You're saving the You're getting the conceded goals out of the way. Yeah, we'll get this out of the way then. Anyway, to my astonishment, we now find ourselves 10th and closer to the playoffs than relegation, marginally. In fact, despite all the grumbling and dissatisfaction with the style of play under David Unsworth and the throwing away of points late on, Oldham have been gathering points pretty steadily for a while. When we lost 4-1 to Notts County on Boxing Day, we were 22nd, where Yeovil are about to finish with 20 points. In 2023, we've picked up 40 more points. And in fact, only Wrexham and Notts County have got more in that time. So in the second half of the season, if that had been doubled over the first half of the season, we'd be third. Yeah, which has really taken me by surprise. I mean, it hasn't felt like that at any point, I promise you. But, you know, the clamour for the manager to be replaced has quietly subsided. He started actually to be linked with other jobs, linked with Walsall.
I saw that.
Mighty Walsall. Yeah. But anyway, and John Askey, who you remember, was suspiciously seen at several of our games mid-season when the chop seemed imminent. he'll be back in the Vanarama with Hartlepool, unless they pull off something remarkable or unless they sack him. And now Wrexham have gone up out of the picture. Fellow moneybags Notts County, hot favourites to join them through the playoffs. So Oldham are actually looking in reasonable shape for next year's far more level playing field. With local derbies against Rochdale as well. And I'm not sure how to process all this. I'm not sure how, you know, optimismo, is it called? I should have a couple of months to get
delusional
used to it before,
is what it's called.
I have a couple of months to get used to it before we get bummed by Ebbsfleet in August.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, You know, it's funny you mentioned about Yeovil and this is the time. This is the season for players of the season, isn't it?
Yes.
Which are gradually coming out. And it just occurred to me when I saw yesterday, this is with my Stoke City head on, that Danny Bart had been made player of the season at Sunderland. And Bart had been so awful for us. I mean, you know, we weren't a great side. We're not a great side now, but we weren't playing particularly well. And it made me start to think, we're forever buying, and I don't know whether it's the same with you, we're forever buying players that I haven't really heard of, but have been their club's player of the year for the last 3 years.
Yes.
And somehow they arrive and you think, I don't remember them being that bad. Yeah. They can't be that bad, can they?
Yeah, we've done that. We've done that this season. We've had John Rooney, Wayne's brother, who's been player of the year. He was the National League player of the year, I think, even.
At Stockport
and at Barrow.
Yeah.
At Barrow. And he'd been at Wrexham because they were booing him quite roundly when we played
there. Yeah. But it is bizarre. The whole player of the year thing is bizarre. And there is no doubt that some people's faces just, or feet indeed, just don't fit when they move clubs. And this just seems to happen to us all the time. But maybe, again, this is the capricious nature of the memory of football fans, you know, that it's like once you've spotted something in a book once, you spot it all the time. And so you see a pattern where there isn't necessarily really one at all. And talking of patterns, of course, this year's going to be like 2011 when Stoke City Football Club got to the FA Cup final, because the FA Cup final is going to be, and we talked about this last week, played on a Saturday at
3 o'clock. Yes.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case when we spoke last week, was it? We did have a little chat about ITV wanting to make the cup final part of a double header with the derby.
Double derby day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the derby is supposed to start at 4:30. And, you know, the thing that would make ITV cream their pants was, of course, the double dip Derby Day banners that they put up. And that has indeed come to pass for Manchester Derby after the semi-finals.
Yeah. Well, apparently, you know, they decided, to be fair, that they were going to consult with the participants. And apparently a lot of the players wanted to play at 3 o'clock, and a lot of the horses, they weren't bothered at all.
Yeah.
How
did they make their feelings known? Did they just not
one,
bang?
One, two is no, one is yes. We know this is how horses communicate.
Yeah,
we've been
exactly.
to pantomime. How else would they communicate?
This is why the race is going to start at an o'clock and not at half past, because, you know, they can do the number, but...
Absolutely.
But anyway, the Met threw a spanner into ITV's works, because I feel like they were gearing up to move it to primetime if it was City United. And the Met have insisted that it's 3 o'clock, which is not because of any particular risk, just because that's where it should be. Yes. 3 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon. Yes.
And then there's been much rejoicing and dancing in the streets.
Not of Sheffield or of Brighton particularly.
No, not particularly there. Yeah. No. And now, of course, they've announced a rail strike for that day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did, that's one of the major stakeholders that they didn't consult.
Yes.
Train drivers.
And they could have just parked their little hooter, couldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm still going to have to slip away, I'm afraid, from a family memorial service to find a pub in Doncaster. But it's going to be harder because that starts at 2. And so 3 o'clock. I mean, actually 5 o'clock kickoff would have worked for me, but never mind. They'll move the derby, won't they? The derby's supposed to be 4:30 because they're not going to go, you know, towards the end of the second half. But now we're going to go away to the horse race.
Yeah, that would be brilliant.
It would be great if they did, from a comedy point of view.
And when you come back, they say, if you don't want to know what the score is, look away now, because we're going to pick up exactly where we left.
Yeah.
or even better, Chris, how about this? Could they not run the derby around the outside of the pitch? Oh, now we're talking. That I'd pay to see. It'd be like the White Horse Cup final, only 40 times more.
Only with different coloured horses.
Coloured horses, yeah.
It'd be like the days when they used to do greyhound racing at Wembley.
I'm up for that. Maybe next year.
Yeah, well, now it's out there. Maybe it's got as much chance of succeeding as the Ronaldo and Messi sitcom.
Yeah.
Now that, you know, it's out there. These ideas are out there to be picked up, aren't they? I think if you want to make a big splash, you need to have a different sort of podcast, don't you? Did you see that apparently the head of UEFA, Alexandra Seferin, has been in America talking to men in blazers? which seems like a bit of a busman's holiday for a sports administrator, frankly. But Men in Blazers is a US football podcast, and they've got a bunch of publicity from this interview with Seferin. I've seen a number of different doom and gloom stories about UEFA this week, and they all seem to go back to this one interview, and people have cherry-picked different things. But everyone seems to have picked up on their own miserable nugget as the highlight of whatever this bloke said. One story, it was clearly a bit of a blighting fan service for his hosts, suggested that Seferin was considering staging the Champions League final in America. This is apparently because of all the fans of the Champions League in America. There's going to be, you know, I think the only way they're going to get a decent crowd is if Wrexham were in it, and you know, so we're at least 5 years away from that.
But, Downton Abbey, if Downton Abbey were in it, you know, they'd watch that.
Get Hugh Bonneville to referee it.
Judy Dench. These are the people that are going to bring the crowds in.
Yeah, exactly. Get Daniel Day-Lewis to show off his left foot. But no, these buggers, these football admin people, they've always got their greedy eyes on America, haven't they? They've already got the World Cup. FIFA already got the World Cup, next World Cup there. If only we could crack America, they seem to think all the time. Think of all the cash we'd be able to rake in, which we're not raking in from the rest of the fucking world. But still. And the Premier League as well. You remember the 39th game they were going to have in America? What a fucking... Anyway. And other papers have picked up on other things.
PFA, isn't it? The wage cap.
Yes. There was a story that UEFA plans to bring in a salary cap as soon as possible. Apparently, Seferin, he says his concern is for the value of the competition. Because if five clubs always win, then it doesn't make sense anymore. And, you know, welcome to the common sense bus, finally. Of course it doesn't make sense. You know, any fool can see that footballers' wages are out of control. Even Infantino, football, you know, current idiot in chief. But that horse has emphatically bolted, it seems to me. It's disappeared over a hill and it's stamping around a Ferrari showroom somewhere.
Waiting for the derby. But the interesting thing about it is, when it, and you know, I'm not an economy. Economics is one of my first loves, as you know, but I'm not an economist.
Guttering is mine.
It seems to me that it still won't preclude the top clubs from paying the biggest wages, because it's all about the percentage of your income that goes out in.
Well, that's what they want to change. That's what Seferin is talking about changing. They're bringing in a thing next year, which is 70% of your income can be spent on wages and transfers. So obviously that favours the clubs that are bringing in the most money. But what they're talking about, I think, is a salary cap of an amount. Which they tried to do in League One and League Two, but the PFA managed to appeal that out of existence.
This is the first I've heard from the PFA, I have to say, in about 2 years. The PFA, you would always be hearing from the PFA.
You would always be hearing, And their new chief is Maheta Malango, who once had a brief loan spell at Oldham as a striker. I think he got a goal, goal in four games, I think. But he says this. I mean, he's in a difficult position as far as the sympathy of the general public is concerned, I think. But he says capping the wages of those who create the product that others continue to benefit from is not a solution to ensuring better financial management by leagues and clubs. But in fairness to Alexander Seferin, what he's talking about is trying to level the playing field, the actual playing field. And if he actually wants to do that, what he ought to do, you know, if he wants to make it a more level playing field and not a perpetuation of the dominance of five clubs, he should look at how they distribute the television money for the Champions League. Do you see how they do this? There's a pot of 600 million, I presume, euros, and it's broken up into 528 units of just over a million. And then the 32 participating clubs, whichever they be, get a distribution based on their coefficient, not their performance in the tournament, prize money, the coefficient thing, which means that Real Madrid, who are top, get 32 units of just over a million, while the bottom club on the coefficient list, whoever that may be, Sheriff Tiraspol or someone, get one unit of a million. And so there's built into it this perpetuation of the top club dominance. Which makes you wonder what the fucking Super League clubs were moaning about, to be honest.
Well, yeah. And then you just reverse that for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the team that's at the bottom gets the most. Why
gets
not?
The most.
The team that's at the bottom.
Exactly. Like they do with the draft in American sport, where they give the first pick to the bottom team. And this is how you level something out, so you don't allow this ludicrous, bloated dominance to carry on. Some other papers picked up on another thing that Seferin said. Did you see that? Where he said that he apparently admitted that UEFA knew that clubs own other clubs in apparent contravention of their rules, but they turn a blind eye. And this is supposed to be an indication. This is why this has got picked up in some of the papers. It's an indication that UEFA wouldn't have a real problem with the Qataris owning PSG and Manchester United. Whoop-de-doo is all I have to say about that. But
really?
Did you see that Ratcliffe shot himself in the foot a little bit with his bid?
With his 20% going to the Glazers?
Yeah, yeah. That's gonna sell, isn't it? That's going to play in the world at large.
I just thought they were going to build a glass stadium. And what he was actually saying was, we're going to be giving 20% to the Glaziers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Call the Glazier.
Call the Glazier.
As Bob used to say, didn't he? Do you remember? I think it was Matthew Hayden was given out LBW walking back to the pavilion, bashing the bat against his pad, looking at Face Like Thunder, and Bumble went, oh dear, call the Glazier.
And congratulations to Burnley and Sheffield United.
Absolutely.
Much joy for the Burnley fans and much pain for the Blackburn fans who had to watch their hated rivals. I do like the fact that people are willing to stay in the ground to hate somebody's success. You know, there were at least 2,000.
It's either that or they're after the loyalty points. They need the loyalty points.
Any old way. That's the game of football as it stands. I also saw that the Midlands Premier League Cup tie between Atherston and Hinckley was abandoned this week when there was a pitch invasion during the penalty shootout when the players were attacked on the edge of the area with 3 penalties to go and Atherston winning.
So what happened to did they allow the result to stand, or did they?
I don't think they've made a decision. They don't get the room where they meet back from ballet until next week. So it's at the end of each month, you see.
We're talking about the penalty shootout, the one in the cup semi-final. I didn't buy that apparently Veghorst had pulled some shithousery that put Solly March off by kissing the ball. I think there's such a desperation to give Veghorst credit for something that that they just thought, oh, he's been canny. He's been canny there. He's kissed the ball.
Yeah. It's not a goal. Look, it's not a goal, and we admit, and it's not an assist. We admit that, and it is why the ball's dead. We admit that, but surely kissing the ball's it's affected the whole result. You know,
it's affected the aerodynamics. It's affected the psychology of the. You know, it's not like Martinez booting the ball to the touchline.
No. Although, which I watched again today for some unknown reason, it just came up on something. When Rashford took that penalty at PSG, when there was so much shithousery, and he just stood and whacked it into the top corner.
Yeah, you kind of have to hope that people who play for your team will have more about them than to be put off by the ball being kissed. You know?
Yeah. Although, we'll wait and see. Let's hope it works in the Ashes. All right, that's us done for this week. We'll be back. We'll be back next week, probably.
Excellent. Very nice and upbeat. Excellent.
Yeah, that's it. Always upbeat. Leave on to more. Come on. Sports Social Podcast Network.